This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. What does hunger look like in Western North Carolina? For some families, the situation is dire, like a child who goes to school on Monday morning, not having eaten since lunch in the cafeteria on Friday. Food insecurity is rampant in counties like Swain and Jackson, and the Carolina Public Press is surveying the region to find out more. Why does hunger still exist, and what's being done to meet the challenge? Joining us to talk about the ongoing series, Faces of Hunger, is managing editor of the Carolina Public Press, Frank Taylor, who joins us in Asheville from Blue Ridge Public Radio. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Frank.
Talk about this, the genesis of this series. What got you thinking about it, and why did you launch this project?
Sure. We had become aware, we're based in Western North Carolina, even though we're a statewide news organization, and we're aware anecdotally of problems with hunger and intense pockets of hunger. So there are intense pockets of prosperity throughout the state and in the West as well. And yet there are isolated places that for various reasons don't participate fully in that. And so the series overall is going to look at broad issues of hunger, but in this first installment we did, one of the pieces we did looked at child hunger, which was pretty devastating. We're seeing some places like, as you mentioned, Swain and Jackson County, the state or the regional average is about 1 in 4 kids in Western North Carolina faces food insecurity. But that's about 4 in 5 in Swain and Jackson counties, according to records from the Census Bureau. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture has said, these are food insecure homes.
What do you mean when you say food insecure?
Sure. So it's a little bit more precise than saying hunger, because somebody's hungry and then they eat and they're not hungry if they get enough food. But food insecure is more of a long-term way of looking at it and saying, do these people have anxiety about where they're going to find their next meal or find their meal a month from now? Do they have uncertainty, and how high is that level of uncertainty about whether they can feed themselves and their family with quality, affordable, and nutritious food?
You talked about the differences, some big differences. Again, it's a region with lots of variation. We're talking about North Carolina. But for instance, even in Swain County, where you say roughly a third of children in that county face food insecurity, why is that different than surrounding counties?
Yeah, I think one of the things about Swain County, it's somewhat isolated, not entirely. Some counties are extremely isolated, but Swain is in the middle of the Smokies. Swain is unique. It's home to the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians who live partially on the Quala boundary, which is property that they own, and they have sovereignty in that area. So there are some unique aspects to what is happening in that area. Bryson City is the largest city in Swain County. It's not a big city. And so there are limited economic opportunities, and we see that in some of the other counties. There's one county, Graham, right next to Swain, where there's just one grocery store in the entire county. For people who don't happen to live near that one grocery store and live across the mountain, getting to the store, especially if they don't have reliable transportation, is quite a challenge.
Well, let's talk keep going.
And Swain has some of those same issues. It's more pronounced in Graham on that particular issue. But transportation, poverty, and some problems with drugs in the community, all of these things have combined to make an area that probably has had a lot of poverty for a long time, perhaps worse now with regard to food insecurity.
Pretty close correlation. We would assume there's a very close correlation between poverty and food insecurity. Do you see variations anywhere, either from county to county or over time?
We didn't look as closely at over time in this particular report, and I think that's something we're going to be looking at going forward. But we do see the variations from county to county. What we see that's very interesting to me, and I was surprised by this. As a journalist, I always think I know what I'm going to report before I find it out, and in some cases, I'm surprised. And so we found that the demographics of hunger in Western North Carolina vary greatly by county. In Cherokee, the most at-risk groups for food insecurity statistically are children and teenagers. But some of the other counties, it's older working adults. I would have expected to see a lot of elderly issues, and I'm not seeing that show up in the data. I think it's because of the volume of elderly people who face food insecurity. We have a lot of wealthy retirees in some parts of Western North Carolina who may be doing just fine. And that may create an imbalance statistically when we're looking at what's happening with elderly populations. We want to take a closer look at that. We're still working on the reporting on this. But certainly we're seeing a problem with children in Swain County and several of the other counties. And we listed several in the report, Swain, Jackson, McDowell, and a few others that have very high levels of food insecurity for children. But there are other counties where that's not doesn't seem to be a major issue. And so there are differences in who is hungry, who is experiencing these challenges in these communities.
And as you say, averages don't always tell the story because you have an influx of, say, wealthy retirees at the upper mm-hmm. end of the age spectrum, well, that's going to throw off your statistics. You really have to look at who is and then why and what the differences are, which is what you're doing in this series. And also, you're not the first to look at this. Clearly, the schools, the counties themselves have been taking this on. So talk a little bit about some of what they're doing. For instance, in Swain County, the schools to combat this?
Yes, the schools in particular have won some statewide recognition for the initiatives that they're doing. They're trying to have bagged lunch programs that will provide lunches for children during the summers. They already are aggressively working with children to ensure that there's not a stigma for children who need to be able to have access to healthy food during the day, as you mentioned in the opening segment. And that's one of the strongest impressions people who read our series get, people who don't realize this. Children are coming to school, and that's the only meal they get. They get that lunch or maybe that breakfast and that lunch. And if it's a Monday, that's the first meal they've had since they went home Friday. And each day, that's their meal. That's what they get. Sometimes it's poverty, pure and simple. Sometimes we have parents who maybe aren't doing all that badly economically, but if they're strung out on meth, they aren't paying attention to what their kids need. And we do have a lot of addiction issues, both meth and opioids in the region. And so we're hearing that as a major problem. We're also hearing about elderly grandparents who are taking care of kids because of the problems with the parents. The schools are having to try to meet that gap and figure out what they do with children when the schools may be the only ones who are really giving proper care to the kids' nutrition. So we're seeing that. We're seeing similar programs in some of the other counties, but it's fair to say Swain's doing a good job. We're also seeing food pantries and hot meals programs that are serving people of all walks of life in these communities, and they seem to be making a substantial difference for a good number of people. Even though what they're doing is commendable, it is something of a Band-Aid. I mean, they're not able to address the systemic issues, but they're trying to make sure that this child or this family on this day does not go hungry. Long-term, we need to figure out additional solutions. I don't have those answers yet, but it's clear that's what needs to happen.
No, and when you talk about the fact that an increasingly number of grandparents, for instance, may be taking charge of their children for one reason, or their grandchildren, or another, this also looks at the way our support network has worked because, what little bit of public support there is now for the most vulnerable among us, so much has been taken away at the federal and at the state level over the past several decades, there's very little left. And what there is for children. But if you're a grandparent, you might not qualify anymore. There's all of these hoops they have to go through. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, and we heard that anecdotally from people. I think that's something as we continue to report, we want to look more closely at exactly what these hurdles are. But anecdotally, we heard from people saying it's not that simple. Yeah, we probably qualify for something, but figuring out how we get it, figuring out how we work with the system is built to say, well, who has legal custody? Maybe the grandparents don't have legal custody, but in fact, they have to take care of these kids. And so there are all kinds of procedural hurdles that have to be crossed that are complicated. And sometimes there's an urgent need and there's no time for dealing with complicated things. If a kid's hungry now, you've got to figure out a way to feed them.
And we're talking a lot in many cases about working families where people are at work. And I think that the story that you report, the story of retired bus driver Paul Crisp is instructive and illuminating. Tell us about Paul.
Paul worked for many years as a bus driver in the schools in that region. I believe is primarily in Swain County. He lives in the town of Whittier, which is on the line between Swain and Jackson counties. And he said, you know, he just doesn't have, as he's retired, he doesn't have enough from what he's getting coming in now. I think it's primarily Social Security. He doesn't have enough to cover his basic needs. And he is very appreciative of the services that are there to help him. He talked with Living Waters Food Pantry in Cherokee. That was a service that's through the Lutheran Church, but it was started with the support of the tribal elders of the Cherokee Eastern Band. And then he also, I think, works some with the Giving Spoon, which is through the Presbyterian Church in Bryson City. So a lot of these are faith-based ministries that are reaching out to people of all walks of life. They're not limited to people of the particular belief or ethnic group, but those are making a difference for people. And he mentioned that and talked about that. But one of a number of people we talk to, you know, facing inability to meet his needs.
And other support groups too, private groups like MANA, for instance. Tell us a little bit about them in a short time.
Well, MANA, MANA is regional, and so they provide food to a lot of these other food pantries. MANA is a food bank based in Asheville, and they are providing the services more regionally to the other facilities. A lot of them partner with or rely on MANA, so that's their role.
All right. Frank Taylor is the managing editor of the Carolina Public Press. Faces of Hunger is the series they have just launched. He's talking to us from Blue Ridge Public Radio. Frank Taylor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can see links to the Carolina Public Press at our website, stateofthings.org.